I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
America's voice of reason. Boyd Matheson.
On Utah's home for elevated conversation.
Inside Sources on KSL News Radio.
We have with us Mark Toth, economist, entrepreneur, and former board member of the World Trade Center St. Louis, to have a conversation about what's going on in Ukraine. So I think, Mark, for the first thing I want to ask you is, for our listeners who may not have been paying attention the last couple of days, what is happening in Ukraine with their dam?
Quite a bit. It's gone. At least a major one that's on the River Dnipro in the Zaporizhzhia Oblast. And while there's some technical doubt as to who did it, it's clear. The Russians did it. The Russians have controlled that dam since, you know, near the beginning of the war. And by my eye, I have some commercial real estate background, so I've dealt with engineers and structural types. It was an implosion. So it came from within inside. Clearly, the Russians were controlling the inside of the structure. The other damage, which there's been some speculation about, is basically water damage. People are like, well, you know, how did those things move further down the dam? But that was just the force of the water taking them. So huge incident. And, you know, while the speculation continues as to who caused it, I think that's just for people to dot their I's and cross their T's. It's clear to me that the Russians did it.
So, Mark, one of the interesting things here is you would think that Russia, if in fact they were the ones responsible for this, would have provided some notice, right, to their troops. Because I was reading that apparently one news article said that the Kremlin's own troops, and I'm quoting now, the Kremlin's own troops were washed away, their trenches flooded, accommodation inundated, and as they ran in the open to save themselves, Ukrainian forces rained death down upon them from the opposite bank of the river. So either the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing, or this seems like just a terrible blunder on the Russians' part, because rather than letting their troops know, hey, this is coming, get out, it sounds like they lost a lot of Russian lives in addition to just the ecological disaster that's going to take place in that area.
Right. I mean, you're spot on, Derek. There's a couple things going on there. You know, the first is that Russia does not value the lives of its troops. This is something that we've seen going all the way back to World War II. They basically are cannon fodder in the minds of their commanding generals. So it's not surprising that the Russian troops were caught there. You know, it's to be expected, because in their minds, and again, it's foolish thinking, in their minds, well, we can catch the Ukrainians off guard, and so what if it kills a bunch of our guys that, you know, are pre-positioned there? But there's just so much more that's problematic with what their decision was. It's one thing to blow it, even though it's still a war crime, to do it in the way that they did it. But they did it pre any massive movement of Ukrainian troops. So to do it as prematurely as they did had no real value and has now created ecological and water issues for them in Crimea itself. It's just foolish. The other thing that's going on is, in terms of the reactions that you were reading about from the Russian soldiers, is another article that John and I had written about the Ukrainians, and we wrote this actually in The Messenger. The Ukrainians are coming. The Ukrainians are coming. I'm sorry, Colonel John Sweet, who I co-write with. We wrote this piece. The Russians right now are seeing Ukrainians everywhere. They're like the boogeyman that the minute, you know, any of these conscripts, these very poorly trained soldiers, you know, see any Ukrainians, you'd think it's, you know, Genghis Khan's army coming. at them. So you've got those two factors coming into play here.
So, Mark, I appreciate very much you mentioning Jonathan Sweet, who you write with, because we're looking at your article from today. So I want to just pivot to that, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
You're talking about, so there's ecological impacts and there's like strategic reasons you may or may not have done like they did with the dam. But you've got a really interesting piece about what this does with the relationship with China. So can you just talk us through that?
Sure. I think in the scheme of things, and again, it's hard to know for sure, but I think in the scheme of things with Chinese President Xi Jinping, is he would have preferred none of this to happen to begin with, but it did. And so given that it's ongoing, he's kind of viewed to date Putin as a useful idiot, you know, on several levels. Putin can weaken the West in advance of any machinations that he might have, military ones on Taiwan down the road, as well as use Russia as a cheap gas station to get his oil and energy needs. And it's kind of ironic because several years back, Putin himself said proudly when he was announcing the high-tech initiatives that Russia was going to be embarking upon, that Russia was no longer going to be a gas station. Well, the net effect of his wars, that's what he's turned the country's economy into.
So what's interesting now is kind of where this goes. And Mark, one of the things you mentioned is that his patience with Putin is likely nearing an end. So talk to us about that. I mean, do you think this is creating a rift between those two leaders that in theory could benefit the West? Or, you know, where does this go?
Yeah, I think you've got to think of Xi. And, you know, despite all the bellicosity coming out of that country, they're still technicians at heart. And the core of their economic plan, their master plan to rule the world, if you will, is their Belt and Road Initiative, what's commonly known as BRI. And there are some estimates by economists that's going to be up to $7 trillion, maybe even $8 trillion in total value. And that extends all the way from China, that's creating green technology roads, you know, kind of a modern version, if you will, of the Silk Road that once connected China to, you know, medieval and Europe. And that's at risk now. Putin's putting that at risk. It's one thing to be fighting in Ukraine. It's another thing to be creating ecological disasters that is going to get all of Europe upset with him for backing Putin. So from that standpoint, you know, they've got a lot on the table. The EU itself is a major trading partner with China. The EU exports 8% and imports 20% of its own products from China. That's a market, you know, Beijing can't lose. So they are nearing an end. And I think these ecological tipping points, like what we've seen with the Kakhovka Dam there, you know, on the Dnipro being blown up, I think that's going to cause a rupture sooner than later.
All right. So, Mark, in the last minute that we have, just pivoting back to Ukraine, what are you expecting to see? What are you watching for? Are there any signs of Ukraine's counteroffensive? Like, what are we looking for there?
Yeah, I think we're still in the probing phase, but probing with force. I know there's a lot of reporting out. I don't believe, and John and I talked about this before I got on, I don't believe that what we're seeing yet is a full-on counteroffensive. And the reason we say that and conclude that, for instance, there's a video circulating today that the Russians are touting of a major pushback, you know, of the counteroffensive, but it was only company size. We're talking 100 men. There were two Leopards. There was a couple of APCs, probably M113s, and maybe 100 men in total surrounding that. What we're not seeing that you would expect to see in a large-scale counteroffensive is, you know, air defense, air operations, supporting artillery, deep strikes coming in over their heads to clear the way, along with engineers who, you know, are clearing pathways and the like. What we saw was basically a probe, you know, a small size company testing Russian defenses to see where the strengths, where the weaknesses are, you know, where they can break through and what they should avoid
exactly. And
go around.
Fantastic. Well, we thank you, Mark. We appreciate you joining us. We've had Mark Toth, who wrote a fantastic piece today in The Hill, specifically about Ukraine, China, and this ecological disaster that's taking place with the dam that has been blown up. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it both, Leah and Derek.
All right. So Derek has got feelings about passports, and we're going to get into it.
Imagine that.
After the break.
Quality. 2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.